This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everyone, today's guest is David Page, singer, songwriter, and keyboardist for the Los Angeles, California rock band, Toto. Together, we take a deep dive into the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the smash hit single, Africa, taken from their 1982 album, Toto 4. Africa is an amazingly interesting lyric, song, arrangement, and production, featuring a stellar lineup of world-class musicians. And it's crazy to think that it was almost left off the record. Yes, you heard that right. David mentioned that the song was written in the 11th hour, and the band as a whole just wasn't that excited about the track, going as far to tell David he should probably save it for a solo record. And it's a darn good thing they didn't. We hear a lot here on Krista Makes a Podcast about huge songs that were written in minutes, but thus was not the case with Africa. David said he spent the better part of 6 months rewriting the lyric and retooling the arrangement to get it to what it became. That perseverance certainly paid off, as this track is one of the most popular tunes ever recorded that continues getting introduced to newer generations of fans with each passing year. So sit back, relax, and let's take a little trip to Africa.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast.
David, how are we?
I'm really good today. How about yourself?
I'm fantastic. This is another one of those dream come true guests on here. And
oh,
I mean that with all my heart, all sincerity. This song we're going to talk about today, Africa, is one of my all-time favorite songs.
Oh, well, thank you.
Brings back such great memories of growing up. This is one of those songs my listeners have heard me say a lot that was just on in the back seat of the car on the way back and forth to school, to Little League games. It was just part of the fabric of my life. And you're just such an extraordinary songwriter and composer and keyboardist. It's an honor to be speaking with you. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, that's... It's been an interesting journey with Africa, and thanks to our fans and listeners, it's still alive out there, and I'm so glad. I love hearing all these stories about people, how it's touched their lives and been the soundtrack of their lives, and I'm excited to be here today.
Well, that means a lot, and I got to tell you, you know, I've used this term before, or said this before on the show, that this song is only dated because I know how many years have passed on the calendar.
Right.
This song doesn't sound dated from a production aspect. This is, there's some world-class players that played on this track. You guys were not.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You guys were not fooling around. Your father, of course, Marty, was a famous jazz composer, and it kind of sounds like it's in your bloodline there.
It certainly is. My dad was a jazz pianist, and I learned a lot of the phrasing. You can hear there's a little bit of jazz phrasing in the solo on Africa with the flutes. He was definitely an influence. Joe Porcaro was an influence with all his percussion stuff, with his marimba, bass marimba that he used on Africa. And
yes,
that was quite a treat that you can hear on the end, kind of a signature sound on that particular riff. So we were very fortunate to be able to lock arms with professionals and bring them in on a record. Tim Schmidt from the Eagles sings on it as well. He sings high harmonies on the choruses.
Right. And of course, you had Lenny Castro, who my band, Less Than Jake, has had Lenny come in and do percussion. He's one of the two guys in LA. If you're going to get anybody, it's going to be either him or Louis Conte to come in and play.
And they're the masters.
And I understand Lenny also went on tour with you guys a little bit, too.
He did. Lenny's the GOAT, you know, and he's such a great percussionist. He's so experienced, and what a great fellow he is. And I know the Rolling Stones use him for their percussion, and I just used him on my solo EP for percussion as well. He's so dynamic, and whatever he brings is magical.
Well, and of course, if I were to talk about all the offshoots of not just yourself, but the rest of the guys in the band of what you did. I mean, just for instance, you played on Bryan Adams' Please Forgive Me. You've played on a bunch of Michael Jackson songs. You played on We Are the World. I mean, arguably one of the biggest songs ever recorded with a list of musicians that is just, you know, absolutely insane. And of course, as I said, your band members, I could talk for an hour just about that. But for the listeners, David is best known, you know, as the co-founder, principal songwriter, keyboardist, and singer of Toto since 1977. You wrote the first hit on the first record, Hold the Line. You also wrote Rosanna, and you wrote Africa. You co-wrote the music with Jeff Porcaro, who was the drummer, and sadly, Jeff's no longer with us. He passed back in the early 90s, but you wrote the lyrics to Africa. And take us back. Do you remember writing the song?
Yes, I do. I had just gotten a new synthesizer, and it had a sound on it, which is the sound that you hear in the verses. The first thing I played on it was that riff. Sometimes a new sound will inspire different musical emotional response. It'll give you a riff like I did in Africa. And then I moved on to the kalimba kind of sounds, was on a GS1. Again, another sound that I was looking for, and a new instrument had new sounds that I emotionally responded to. So I was pretty much trying to construct a great song, and I got a verse on it. And then I sat down at my piano and started playing it, and I just sang, and just those words just came out in the chorus when I was sitting down playing. And I thought to myself, I have something here. I better stop for a second and write this down and then complete this whole thought right here. You know, Africa was kind of an 11th hour song and barely made the album. You know, we had our album done, and everybody told me to keep the Africa for my solo record, which is a polite way of saying it's not going to make the album.
Right.
So I'm very fortunate. And I think it's a great tribute to the song that it's been around. It's had such longevity. It was a journey writing it.
Well, you know, you were, of course, out there, and you may have had detractors back in the day or someone that didn't like you because you guys were popular. But honestly, I can't think of another song, David, that I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Africa. Everybody just loves this song. I mean it. Like, what are you going to say that's bad about it? And I don't know how else to say that. It could be the biggest artist in the world whom you've worked with, Michael Jackson. There was people that didn't like Michael or people that didn't like Bruce Springsteen or whoever.
That's right.
But Africa's right. Just that song that just, as you said, people are continuing to love. Even Weezer, who put their spin on it, which they did an incredible job, I thought, on emulating what you guys did. They didn't try to make it their own. They just did it.
So did I.
I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Weezer version very much. They were very close to our blueprint on it, but yet they put their own thing into it, you know, which is more powerful guitars and a great vocal and everything like that. So I got a real kick out of it, was very flattered and honored that Weezer did their version. And it just kind of helped people, young kids, rediscover the song.
And I can't tell you how many times people have said this song was an 11th hour song. It almost got left off the record. The other guys in the band didn't like it. And then it becomes the biggest thing that the band is known. It's incredible how that happens. And of course, the first record, self-titled, came out in 78. Hydra came out in 79 and Turn Back in 81. And although you guys did have some success overseas, particularly in Japan with that period, things kind of got dried up a little bit in the States singles wise. And you guys came back with Toto 4, and the rest is just absolute history, with Africa being that and Rosanna being the standout tracks.
Yeah, that was a kind of a benchmark album for us. And it was everybody's best efforts there. I'm really proud of the band. It really shows off their musicianship, and the collaborative effort was amazing on that. We had different songs from different people, and we were all kind of collaborating on most of the songs. And I think Rosanna is exemplary of how Toto sounds. You're able to hear lyrics, you're able to hear a great drum intro, you're able to hear a fantastic synthesizer solo, and the guitar solo is classic on it. And I think that all in all, it's very representative of how Toto sounded at that time. She's gone. And I still enjoyed listening to the record.
You should. Like I said, it sounds absolutely incredible. And do you recall what the label thought of the record when you first presented it to them? Did you guys know when you got these mixes back, did you know these songs were hits, particularly Africa?
We didn't know about Africa being the hit, but we had a feeling that Rosanna had this magical something about it. And all we did was we worked on Rosanna until we finished that track. And then we were spending a lot of time in the studio, almost going over budget, I think. And we brought the president of the label down and played him Rosanna. And he gave us the approval and blessing to keep finishing the album and to keep working on it. And because he liked that cut. So things fell into place after Rosanna got cut and mixed.
Well, before we jump in the track, I got to give one more shout out to a song that you wrote. You wrote a song with Boz Scaggs called Lido Shuffle that is just another one of those, backseat AM radio, a grandpa's car driving down the road as a kid, that just the memories from that song. And again, we could sit here and talk all day about you and what the band has done. Lido. Whoa! He said, one more time, Bobby, one last shot before we quit. One more bar to go. Lastly, before we get into the track, you guys self-produced, and how hard is that with the level of musicianship that you guys have? I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of respect with one another, but did things ever get heated being self-produced?
Occasionally, people will get passionate, extremely passionate about their point of view on it, and we'll get into a discussion, not so much argumentative as it is trying to select the right music and make the music better. It was all about the music. And so because everybody's produced and arranged, everybody kind of produces their own part, because makes it very easy when someone knows how to fit in a part to a certain song. So it was like having 5-6 producers there that all were contributing to the production of the Toto 4 record. So it was very, very magical, very a great time.
Was there any video documentation of the sessions? Because, oh man, I would love to have been a fly on the wall.
Oh, me too. I don't think there was. At that particular time, there wasn't a lot of, there was no iPhones around to take pictures and stuff. So people had little cardboard cameras or not big expensive Nikons, you know?
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of pictures around for that time, just on the cover, the back cover of the album cover. So I remember it. I have fond memories in my head of seeing the horn players all line up with James Pankow in the middle of them from Chicago.
Yeah.
And also seeing Jeff and Lenny and David Hungate and Lukather in the studio at Sunset Sound with Al Schmidt cutting the tracks. And it was really something. We were really at our best, on our best notes, you know.
That is so cool. Well, the track is 4 minutes and 55 seconds, and that's what we're going to talk about, the album track. The radio edit was 4 minutes and 21 seconds. I did go back and listen to that. I couldn't find a demo of this song. Did you guys demo it? Do you recall?
You know, I don't think that we did demo it. I think that we made it because we were at the last 11th hour. And I think we just said, well, let's just go in the studio and make the record, because I was playing it and I needed a loop from Jeff Porcaro to set up the song, to give this pulse, this hypnotic heartbeat to it, which him and Lenny did with a great job. So once we got that pulse, I was able to play the skeletal guide track on a synthesizer and put a little guide vocal on it so we could finish out and paint the picture. With the guitar, with the bass, with background vocals. And then after most of it got done, after the harmonies and stuff were put on, I was able to do my lead vocal in the verses. So it was a fun, ambitious endeavor, and we total attacked it. It was great. Hearing all the creativity coming out of to the Steve Lukather on his acoustic guitar parts, David Hungate on his bass fills, Bobby Kimball sang the chorus, fantastic. And, of course, the solid beat of Jeff Porcaro and Lenny Castro there supplying the heartbeat. And Steve Porcaro helping out with all the synthesizers.
I got to tell you totally gave me the chills just now, because the first four bars of this song I wrote, that's the pulse of this song. And,
yeah,
and you coined,
absolutely.
You said that term. That's the heartbeat.
Yeah.
That's the foundation of this track. And it is so good. It's an 8-bar intro, 4 bars of percussion. On bar two, there in in my headphones, as I'm acutely listening, there's a laugh panned off to the left.
Oh, a laugh? Oh,
yeah.
Really? That must have been Jeff.
Okay. Do you know what I'm talking
about? I haven't heard that. I'll have to listen to. I thought you were going to say, well, the cowbells came
Oh,
in.
That's coming in on bar three. No, we're still at bar two
we're
here.
We're still at bar two.
Yeah. So it's just percussion going on. No.
Well, that's fantastic.
No instruments are in. And there's this laugh that happens. On bar three, the cowbell comes in, panned off right. And then on bar five, the keys come in with bass, guitar, acoustic guitar. There's that synth panned off left. I'm calling it the fluttering synth. Is that a marimba or xylophone panned off right here in the intro?
I think so. I think that's a real marimba. I think that's a real marimba panned off to the right.
It sounds so, so killer. And again, we got kick drum, hi-hat, congas, and shakers here. What an absolute groove for the first 30 seconds intro here. Again, I said, my notes here, it's the pulse of the song. And then we get into verse one.
Hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight, the moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, but she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in, 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, It's waiting there for you.
Well, in my own mind, you know, I was making a fictitious narrative about a guy who was a social worker in Africa and who may have been there all alone and had reached out to someone via long distance to a possible mate of his. So he was, she was flying in to be with him. And this is kind of his journey, his self-discovery journey along the way.
I am just at kind of a loss for words when I see lyrics like this, this story that you came up with. And I'm thinking how, you know, as my listeners know, I'm good with chords. I'm really good with melodies. Lyrics aren't really my thing. And I look at something like this, I'm like, how did somebody come up with this?
Yeah. I used to read National Geographic a whole lot, look at the pictures, but I also read all the content that was involved. So by a lot of National Geographics, and a lot of them had some poetic phrases in it that I paraphrased on some of the things. And some of them just came from my own imagination, you know, of always wanting to go to Africa and wondering what it's like, you know, to be a social worker there, which it was an opportunity back in the time, if you go back into the early 70s, there was a lot of, you know, UNICEF and social working done and people talking about helping, you know, giving aid to people around the world here. So Africa was inspired by a lot of things.
Would you agree that things were a little bit more mysterious 40 years ago in terms of not everything's at our fingertips with the internet? Africa was this exotic place that most people never traveled to. And there was a mysterious quality about it that you're writing about, and it's already intriguing.
It was, you know, and I wasn't taking the whole continent as a whole, but just the fact that this character happened to be in Africa. You know, I'm thinking Tanzania, you know, in that area, South Africa. And of course, apartheid was going on at the time. And so there were difficulties of people visiting there and playing there. So I'm so glad that it opened up later on. We were actually able to play Africa in Cape Town in Johannesburg. And that was a real pinch me moment because we invited percussionists and singers to come on stage and perform it with us in their South African dress, which is very colorful, very diverse and very colorful. And it was a magical moment.
I'm smiling ear to ear. What was that like? They had to be singing at a deafening roar, right?
Yeah. It was great. It was fantastic. The whole crowd was singing, but this choir, this little youth family choir sang. They had eight voices and they sang a little piece before Africa came on, just a cappella. And it was just, it melted our hearts, you know? It was fantastic.
You know, I've had my moments as a performer. I've done things I never, ever thought that I would do. Okay, but here you are. Do you still have those pinch me moments? You're on that stage. You're like, this was a song that almost got cut from the record. These guys wanted me to save it for my solo album. And here I am at a stadium in South Africa and everyone's embracing it. You have to be sitting there going, this is crazy.
You know, to this day, I think those very thoughts when I sit and sing Africa. Still, it's kind of a pinch me moment going, I still can't believe that we're here and that this song has transcended time and is still relevant right now. And I'm very blessed and Toto's been very lucky and very blessed to have us a few hits have had longevity.
Yeah, and it's funny how technology, something you never would have known that it would have existed 40 years ago, things like TikTok now that people are putting Africa on. It's just like, it just keeps going. And in 10 years, 5 years, there's going to be something else. But there's a lot going on here in verse one. The groove continues from the intro. That acoustic guitar is kind of panned off left, playing arpeggios. And a brass sound on the keys is now playing chordal pads.
That's right.
In this verse. Is the lead vocal doubled here?
Yeah, the lead vocal's tripled.
Oh, it is. Okay.
We used to do a very shaded tripling, which is a lot of the lead, just a little bit of the double, and very little of the triple. Used to smooth out all the vocals right there. We used to do triple most of our vocals during that period when we didn't have a lot of digital gear that would do doubling and harmonizers and that kind of thing. So we had to do that organically.
Right, because this was all done to two-inch tape. There was no fixing it in the computers. So, and you guys were good enough vocally and as players to double stuff. But I asked if it was doubled because it sounds so thick and full. But there's only a couple words where I can feel that rub. It's very locked.
I'm so glad. Yeah. Well, we prided ourselves in getting things very locked in, as you say, and very, very fine-tuned. We learned from making records with Seals and Crofts.
Oh, yeah.
And making records with Steely Dan, how to really microscope in on tuning of vocals and tuning and making sure parts were locked in the pocket and all those traits that are needed to make fine records.
Yeah, and those parts where I can slightly hear what I'm calling a rub, they're brilliant. They're perfect.
Oh,
they were left there for a reason.
I'm glad that you appreciate the magic that we that was painstakingly done so that it would have that magical rub to it, you know. And all these clip moments, we were hoping that people such as yourself, listeners, would pick up on it, and especially in a good set of headphones, pick up some of the layering. And there's like in the second verse, there's a recorder that comes in from Jim Horn.
Yes.
Who's played with the Beatles. He's played on all the George Harrison stuff. He plays a little recorder on the second verse.
We're going to talk about that because that part, that part is killer. And I just, this is kind of blowing my mind. The triple vocals. That's really cool. On the line, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. On ancient melodies, we get the first harmony in the song. It's a subtle harmony panned off left. And on the line, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you, which you can almost make an argument, David, that line in and of itself, when that happens again, and even the second time that happens, it's a different lyric. It's almost like a pre-chorus there, that one line. It's like a setup.
It is. That's the idea behind it. Very, very astute there. And I keep trying to propel this character forward, you know, in the narrative.
No, it's great. And again, you get a subtle harmony. I'm calling it subtle. It's not really loud in the mix. It's there. Yeah. It's panned off left. And then you get that great rock drum fill. It's just classic.
Yeah.
You know?
Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you.
Classic Jeff Porcaro, you know, really putting it where it's supposed to be. But still, it has this tribal quality to it that I like.
Yes.
When he plays drums or anything on it, you know.
Yeah, there's so much going on here. At its foundation, it's rock, but there's elements of jazz. There's progressive elements here within this track. It's great. That drum fill launches us into chorus one.
It's going to take a lot to drag me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do. I bless the rains down in Africa. Going to take some time to do the things we never had. Ooh, ooh. And I got to say, you know, we have this lovely little thing in our hands now that we can look up lyrics. But I remember having arguments of what people thought the line "I bless the rains." What is it? What are they saying there? You know.
I know. So many people are. It's just so many interpretations. It brings a smile to my face.
Yeah.
The people even thinking about those lyrics and trying to decipher them. You know.
I was in fourth grade, and I remember having that discussion with people, what I just said, as vivid as yesterday, like on the school bus, talking about that part. What's going on lyrically here?
I think, you know, it's very hard for me to discuss these lyrics because they're nebulous, even to me, you know what I mean? In the frame of mind that I was writing the lyrics. But this is just a guy who's torn between his work, his social working, and trying to have a life with a mate. You know, possibly. And he's having to make that decision, you know. I grew up when I went to high school. I was in an all boys college, Catholic prep school. So they would, we would have brothers in the seminary that would teach us. There were brothers and priests there. And the brothers had gone and done social work over in Africa, some of them. And we asked, like, what kind of things did you do over there? And they said they would, the villagers would come out in the villages, and he would bless their books, bless their crops, bless their villages, and any artifacts that they would have right there. And even if they had no, if there was drought, they'd pray for rain. And when rain would come, they'd bless the rains down there. So I kind of got this from that experience in high school of listening to some of the brothers that were teaching us tell us about their experiences.
Hey everybody, we got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with David Page after a few words from our sponsors. Chris, as you know, and as many of our listeners might know, our show is sponsored by Rockabilia.com. And I got to tell you, we have David Page from Toto on the show this week. And dude, there is the sickest Toto Africa Tour t-shirt on there that I seriously really, really want. I'll probably order it as soon as we're done recording this. They also have one with the artwork from the Toto 4 album, you know, like the red cover.
Oh,
with
yeah.
That. Yeah. It's an awesome shirt. I mean, rockabilia.com is the place to go with over 500,000 different merch items. And you know how us band guys love merch items. I mean, we depend on them.
Well, hey, wait, real quick. Is that Toto shirt for you or for me?
Do you want one? Because I still got to get you a gift. Which one do you want?
You I told you, t-shirt. I'm over $200 right now. Over two bills into this company because their selection is absolutely insane, dude. It's nuts. And you get 15% off if you use the promo code DEMAKES. My last name will get you 15% off, and there's so much stuff.
That's got to feel good to type your own name in there and get $30 off your $200 order on Rockabilia. Yes, everything on Rockabilia is officially licensed, which is important to people like you and me, Chris. Because we don't like that knockoff stuff, man. We depend on that, especially now more than ever. You know, you depend on merch sales as an artist. So I love Rockabilia, not only as a shopper, but as a guy who likes to see artists receive the money they deserve, you know?
That's right. It's the real deal. Everything is officially licensed. More band merch than any other company or website. Over 500,000 items featuring bands across a ton of genres. It's the place to shop for rock clothes. It's awesome. They have belt buckles, toys, ashtrays, you name it. It's not just shirts, but it's awesome.
For sure, man. Rockabilia.com. Use the discount code DEMAKES and get 15% off your order. And on top of that, you can feel good about it. You're supporting bands. And on top of that, you're also supporting a sponsor of Chris DeMakes a Podcast. What more could you ask for?
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/DEMAKES. That's distrokid.com/VIP/DEMAKES.
Now, back to the show.
Without trying to get too personal, were you in a good frame of mind during this time in your career writing these lyrics? A lot of times when you write a story like this is, there'll be some vague similarities that bleed out in the lyrics of what you were going through emotionally.
There was a time period where I had gone through a tragedy. I had lost my mom on the Hydra album, and that kind of took its toll on me. But by the time we finished, we got to Africa, things were looking up pretty good. So I was in a pretty positive frame of mind, even though the man and the protagonist in the song sounds like a tortured soul, which we always tried to accomplish. He's one of our favorite heroes is the tortured soul, you know,
right,
in the song.
Right.
So this is no different, you know what I mean? We just kind of let this character dangle by a thread out there, you know?
Well, that's very cool. Of course, Bobby Kimball's vocal takes over here on the chorus, and he just sails here, and it's chilling. It's such a great, great lead vocal.
Yeah.
In the chorus, the percussion's still in. Drums, bass, guitar, and that acoustic guitar is panned off left, but it gets busier here, David, with those arpeggios.
It does.
Keyboards are layered throughout, and that brass tone is playing a little hook after each vocal line that happens.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. Yeah, that was a great patch. It was called a flute brass. Flute brass. It had this puffy flute sound to it, even though they had a brass quality to it.
Okay. You know? It is killer, and we're getting at least a three-part or more harmony on the second, third, and fourth lines here. It is awesome. Right out of chorus one, we go into a four-bar reintro. On bar two, there is a gong crash.
Panned, that's right.
Yeah, panned off right. It's so cool. And then we get that synth flutter panned off to the left on bars two and four before we get into verse two. And verse two, of course, you just mentioned, I had written in my notes, it's a high-pitched flute sound, but that's actually a recorder that's present.
Recorder played by Jim Warren.
Cool.
Yeah. He actually played recorders. And then I think I sang the oohs and ahs. There's oohs.
Oh, yes.
Coming up right there in that verse right there. That was me because I sang them down low. And just added this pad.
They're so cool. And I'm telling you, David, I've heard this song. I've heard it at baseball games, at malls, in the car, on my Walkman at the time, to my compact disc player, to now MP3s, and on my phone. I've heard it everywhere, but I've never sat down like this. And listening to that, I never knew it was a recorder. It was kind of always there, and I'm listening going,
yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. It sounds almost like a penny whistle
yeah.
up there, you know?
Yeah.
But it could have been a synth. I mean, nowadays they do it with a synthesizer, you know what I mean? As opposed to a real recorder, you know?
The wild dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. What's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
The wild dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, as sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
Yeah. Pretty heavy, huh?
Yeah, it is, especially that,
you know?
Especially that last line.
Yeah, that's about this guy who's suffering from his own demons and trying to reconcile that in his own mind.
It's great. Well, again, that that recorder is present throughout verse two here. It's kind of swirling around. It goes to the right and it goes to the left.
Oh, does it really? Oh, great. I'm gonna have to check this album out on headphones.
I always joke with my guests on here. I say, wait, you don't listen to your stuff all the time? And of course you don't. And I remind people of some things that they don't recall. But on the second line here, I love starting it about longing for some solitary. These oohs lead up to the harmony that's just on the word company, panned off left.
Restless longing for some solitary company.
That's right. Very good.
Yeah. It's so good, though, because I've never really heard that executed the way you did it. It's either here's an ooh and an ah part or a whoa, whoa, whoa,
right,
and here's the backing harmony. It's intertwined here, and I can't really discern what's going on. I just know it's cool.
Yeah, I think my Beach Boys influence seeped in right there, you know, about that kind of Letterman Beach Boys sound, which is kind of this ooze, this real vanilla sounding ooze, you know, right there. So I'm glad you liked it.
It is so awesome. And then we get a full harmony on the line. I know that I must do what's right. That's panned off left. And then rises like Olympus above. That, the ooze start there. And then you get the harmony on Serengeti, panned off left. Here's the first time in the song, David, that I, on the line, I seek to cure what's deep inside. On deep inside, I can hear the double or actually triple vocal there. Kind of rub a little bit, but man, it feels so good.
I seek to cure what's deep inside. Frightened.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad, you know.
It's really cool. And then we get a harmony on what I'm calling pre-chorus two, this one line. We get a harmony on frightened of this thing that I've become. Interesting here, the drum fill is half of what it was on verse one. You don't get the drum fill on the first half of the bar.
Again, that's Jeff again trying to... minimalism with Jeff's and his fills, but they're always succinct, you know.
A lot of times, though, you'll hold back on verse one or two, and you'll do that later in the song with the big drum fill. Here, the big drum fill was on on the first time, and now he pulls it back.
That's right. Yeah, that's Jeff. That's Jeff's musicality. I attribute that to the band's musicality, you know, especially Jeff's.
I feel that it actually hits harder this way because as a listener, you're anticipating that first drum fill that's not there. It's like, whoa, and then it hits you the second half. It's like kind of smacks you in the head. It's great.
Yeah, it's real clever.
It is. It is. Well, we get into chorus two. The same lyric as chorus one. We get the same harmonies on this one. At the very end, you say, ooh, ooh, that leads right in to another four-bar reintro. And I got to say, this reintro happens like four times in this song. And of course, it's the outro later that we're going to get to because it is, again, to coin your term, it's the pulse of the song.
Yeah.
It is so, it's so underlying and it's the heartbeat of this thing that it's a hook that has to be there that many times.
Yeah. I found it very infectious when I played the riff the first time. I didn't stop playing that for a couple of days, just the opening riff.
Yeah.
And then the answer to it, which was on the Kalimba sounds that I put in there. And, again, I've heard the song hundreds and hundreds of times already. And I still listen to it when it comes on the radio. I listen to the whole thing and to the very end because it's infectious. And I don't get tired of hearing. It always brings something new to the foreground when I listen to it. I hear something different, you know?
Well, I've gotten to hear the song again for the first time doing this podcast. And I every week I marvel at how many times I've heard these songs, but I'm hearing them for the first time. When you really get in the headphones and you break it down like this, it's extraordinary. Well, after the 4-bar reintro, we go into an 8-bar, what I'm calling a musical interlude bridge. And it's a keyboard solo here, and it's like those marimbas again are playing together with the keys here.
Yeah, that was synthesized.
It was, okay.
Yes, that was synthesized, those were. And the flutes and the marimba, again, were synthesized right there. Very good sounds. I think they're Steve Beccaro needs to be commended on that, because he came up with those sounds. And it just was a natural for me to play that kind of part, that kind of serendipitous part right there. You know what I mean? It's free flowing, and to me, a little bit indicative of South Africa, you know?
And let's hear for the Porcaro family and the the level of musicianship there with those four guys.
Absolutely.
Mike, Jeff, Joe, and Steve. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're a real powerful package there.
Yeah. And that solo, as you were talking about in the intro, that solo has those, you know, jazzy elements to it. It's not just something straightforward. There's a lot going on there.
There is. There is a couple little things. I'm glad you picked up on that. It was kind of trying to keep it swinging along there a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And can we talk about the bass progression and the tone here in this musical interlude? Yeah. It is so...
Yeah, that's a verse. That's a verse. That's like a third verse.
Yes. Yes.
That I'm playing over the top of that. So it was an interesting challenge to come up with a solo for those changes, you know?
It is so awesome. And we're also getting what I'm calling some regular piano tones here too in this part.
You are. Yeah, for weight. I use that piano for weight in the chorus and occasionally in the verse. I think it was just what's called dovetailing, very softly playing along with the other instruments in there.
Yeah, no, it is absolutely awesome. And right at the very end of this musical interlude, this bridge, we get what I'm calling pre-chorus three here, David.
Hurry, boy, she's waiting there for you.
Hurry, boys, she's waiting there for you. There's a harmony. There's just a slight lyrical change here from the first time this happens. It says, hurry, boy, she's waiting there instead of it's waiting there. Why the change?
That's right.
Why the change there?
Because I wanted people to know that it was a personal relationship going on right here. And I wanted them to know that it defined the pronoun as a she as well as an it for his happiness and his... just his finding his way through life, and he's able to connect with this person. It's all about connection with the person.
It's so good. Well, chorus three comes right after that line.
It's going to take a lot to drag me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do. I bless the rains down in Africa. I bless the rains down in Africa. And right there we get a backing vocal. I bless the rain, panned off left. The next line, I bless the rains down in Africa, with another backing vocal. Oh, I bless the rains, panned off left. I bless the rains down in Africa. I bless the rains down in Africa. Oh, gonna take the time, backing vocal. And then the very last line is gonna take some time to do the things we never had. Ooh, ooh. And then we get into the outro, which we'll talk about in a moment. But chorus three here, on the first three lines, there is a guitar lick that's introduced there. It's distorted. It's like, now, 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 now. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I think that's what sold Weezer on a girl wrote in that she loved the electric guitar on Africa, and she thought that they should do it, this 14-year-old girl. So that prompted Weezer to cut the track, believe it or not.
It's only on those first three lines, though. It's not, and it could have been on the other ones. Why wasn't it?
Because we like to peel. It's called peeling the onion. You know what I mean? We like to, little by little, we like to unveil what's going on here. You know what I mean?
It is so good. And can we talk about the bass again? It gets busier here during chorus three, and what a groove.
Yeah. Yeah. David Hungate's amazing bass player. And I especially love his fills on the very end.
Yes.
The fade out where he does those high fills. Those are really, again, SA, South African's feeling to me, you know, when I hear that kind of stuff. It just was a magical situation where everybody really came to. Everybody really brought it, you know.
I'm glad you used the word magical. There's something within this track. It feels mysterious at points. It feels exotic. It feels like, again, I know the depth of musicianship here, but how did you guys come up with this? How did you put it all together?
Part of it's just, you know, the gift. I've been born. I was given a gift from God, and it's my duty, my responsibility to manifest that gift out as far as music goes. And my father had a lot of respect for music and always reminded me that we were very blessed with gifts. And one of them was music. So I chose this line of work because I enjoyed using my gift, which is melodies and lyrics and songs. But sometimes they come at a price. They take a long time. I mean, the verse lyrics on the Africa lyrics took me. I was on and off of that for 6 months.
No kidding.
Working on different verses of it. You know what I mean? Different versions of it and stuff. So, of course, I was co-producing the rest of the album with the lads, but it was a long journey getting that one together, just so it was just right, you know.
That's interesting, because a lot of times, as you know, you can overcook an idea. You can just
absolutely.
You can keep going with it to where you just hit a wall, and you're like, okay, now there's just too much in this. And that's the other thing I wanted to say here about, in particular, the bass playing. All you guys in this song, but the bass at the end, it's a step up from what's happening in chorus one and chorus two. But again, you guys can rip. He could rip solos, and you guys could go off so much harder than you are. There is also some restraint here at the level of musicianship you have.
Absolutely. You know, there's a modicum of restraint used on that whole song, I think, you know what I mean, where everybody's just trying to follow the character and follow the words here and leave room for that, as opposed to overplaying it and get bashing too hard, you know.
Well, again, the outro here is darn near a minute long, okay? And it warrants itself to be that long, I feel, David, because, again, it's the pulse of the song. It's a 20-bar re-intro, outro, fade out as instruments begin to fall out. You mentioned the onion earlier. I feel like the onion's getting peeled away here, because the last few bars of this song on the fade out, it's only back to the percussion of what the song started.
Yeah, we're back where we began, you know, back in Africa there, you know, and to me, it's symbolizes what, you know, the song is about. It really, in that outro, you know, you can feel the tones.
What a way to tie up the song. And I never noticed that before till I got in the headphones and really looked at it. I said, wait a second, we're back to the campfire jam. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good. Well, listen, I tried my best not to stumble over my words. I've been so excited to talk to you about this song, and it's been so much fun. Before we break, I'd like you to leave the listeners with what you're going on. I understand your debut solo album titled Forgotten Toys is going to be out soon, or is it out now? Because I got some songs from your manager, and listen, folks, the listeners out there, check out this record. It sounds amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you like it. And I'm very proud of it and feeling a bit of closure for finally getting it out there. And it was fun to work with all of my friends who played on the record with me. And I'm very proud of it.
I went into it with an open mind, open ears. You never know. Don't take this the wrong way. A lot of the older artists will put something out, and you're always in your mind measuring it up to what they did in the past, to your memory,
that's right,
to your memories of who they were or what they were. And right. I put this on, and it sounds as fresh as all get out. It sounds awesome.
Oh, thank you. That's what we were going for, is to something that sounded, had some tradition to it, and had, you know, some basic grounding, but also had some new surprises for people, you know.
Well, congratulations. You hit it out of the park.
Thank you so much.
And again, thank you for sitting in with us. It's been my absolute pleasure.
Thank you. You know, I just want to say, you know, thanks to our fans and listeners out there. They seem to have an insatiable desire to hear Africa over and over again, which kind of explains why it's still around. And, you know, I like to think that it's still relevant because it's a multi-generational song. I think parents heard it, it passed it on to their kids, and now kids are being turned on to it. I've heard 12 and 13-year-old girls sing Africa to me with all the lyrics and everything like that. And it was pretty amazing, you know. I met Adam Sandler, and his daughters sang Africa to me, and they were like 12 and 13 years old, okay? So I got a big kick out of that.
As you should. And I'm telling you, this song's going to be here for a long time after you and I aren't here.
You're right. That sounds great. You know, I certainly hope so. And be kind to me on my lyric description here, because it's very hard for me to explain a lot of my lyrics, but especially that song right there, because it's just, there's a lot, it's quirky. It's a fragmented narrative. You know what I mean? Where I go jump from this to jump to that. You know what I mean? So I used a lot of poetic license there, what one might say.
It's the most perfect fragmented lyric I've ever seen. So there you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That song you just heard is Spirit of the Moonrise from David Paich's new album, Forgotten Toys. Chris wasn't kidding. This record is awesome, so make sure you check it out. And don't go anywhere. Chris and I have a lot to talk about with this episode in the rap segment coming up after a few quick words from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Find Yourself, the new single from Punchline, is out now.
I'll lead or I'll follow, I just wanna get there. If anyone knows better, then please show us out of here. I'm not saying I know, but I see the next step. If that's all we can get, then it's better than zip.
Listen to Punchlines, Find Yourself on Apple Music, Spotify, and everywhere you stream music.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is the Frickashinas, a four-piece punk rock band from Denver, Colorado, consisting of Justin Duran on vocals and guitar, Jeremiah Lidman on guitar, Sam Holder on drums, and Brett Arun on bass and vocals. Look for their debut full-length coming soon. Here's a snippet of their song, I Like Your Band Better.
Hey, what you doing?
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So how surreal was that episode, man?
Beyond surreal.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably one of the greatest songs ever written. The song's awesome.
I absolutely love the song. I love that episode. I think you did a great job holding it together. I know you were as excited as I was about this one, but there were a lot of things about this episode that I thought were really cool. One of the first things that I took note of was that he talked about how he got a new instrument. He got a new keyboard, and that inspired him to write. Have you ever experienced that before? Have you played on something different and that inspired you?
Oh, absolutely. When I had used Pro Tools for years, and then I got Logic. I had switched at some point, and I was kind of using them both in tandem for a while, but there was this plugin on Logic that I put on a guitar. It was this like phaser, and I was like, that's the coolest sound I ever heard. And I wrote a song that day because of that sound. So yeah, that's happened to me before.
Yeah, I'll never forget when I first got a MacBook that had GarageBand on it, and I had a little MIDI keyboard hooked up to it. I laugh to this day about the demos that I made where I used so many sounds, all these sounds that I didn't have access to before that, all these weird instruments. I just went over the top with it because I was inspired by them. So in a way I related to that, but I can imagine in the, you know, 70s and 80s, it's like you have to have the physical instrument and you can get these crazy elaborate keyboards that have these amazing sounds that you hear a lot of in Africa, and I could see how he would be inspired by those. I also thought, speaking of inspiration, it was really cool that he got inspired by reading National Geographic. I was like, yes, if you're a writer, keep your eyes and ears open to everything because inspiration can come from anywhere.
And when he said that, I flashed back to that time period because my mom got a subscription to National Geographic for our household that used to come every, whatever, week or month. And I would read that and there'd be, you know, African safaris written about and different things. And so, when we, you know, that hit home with me when he was talking about that as well.
And the story about them then performing the song in South Africa, that's incredible.
Oh,
think about doing that.
No, I know. And just let's talk about for a second how humble he is. And he says he still pinches himself. He gets out there and I said, here you are, this song you wrote that, hey, it almost got left off the record. They didn't think they had anything here. A couple guys kind of frown on it in the band. It's like, hey, use it for your solo record, David. It arguably become one of their signature biggest songs.
It's funny to think about Africa not making the record. Think about that. And Chris, even go deeper. Think about the songs that have been left off of records that would have been hits that just were never on the album.
Mm-hmm.
That probably happens every day. Some song gets left off or not released that would be or could be a hit. Luckily, that didn't happen with Africa.
Right. And, you know, again, I was trying not to get tongue-tied in this episode. I was trying my best to reel it in because, you know, if you want to everybody listening right now, just go to their Wikipedia page and just go through each individual member of the band that played on this track and see what they've done outside of Toto. It's mind-blowing.
I love that you are telling him things that made him go, I'm going to have to go listen to this in headphones now. The little laugh at the beginning, all those things. I love when you tell people things about their own song that they don't know yeah. or maybe forgot or whatever.
I must have rewound that like 15 times. Like, what is that? I'm like, wait, that's someone laughing. Like, and that was just on the drum track. It was a mic that picked up. It sounds like it was the drummer Jeff. Jeff's laugh, he said there at the top of the song, that I think he will go back and listen to it. I really do.
I also liked his, I don't know what you're going to call it, a metaphor or whatever, of peeling the onion as the song continues, unveiling new things. Man, I did not envy you having to having to dissect all the things happening in the song. I love all the things that happen, but just even recognizing everything that's happening is, I mean, that's a task, man.
Yeah, it was difficult. I really had to take, you know, part by part. Okay, I'm just going to focus on the intro right now only. You know, this wasn't one of those songs. I a lot of times I'll put a song on and listen to it just two or three times. You know, even songs I've heard, I'll just listen to the whole thing. This one, I just, from the very beginning, I'm like, okay, I know the song well enough arrangement wise. Let's just take one part at a time and bite it off. Something I didn't mention to David, this song's at 806 as of yesterday, million YouTube plays. It's over a billion Spotify streams right now. You know, we talked a little bit about Weezer and how the song just keeps having legs 40 years after the fact. It's awesome.
I mean, it's probably one of the biggest songs ever of all time. It hasn't gone away, you know, and it's been, you know, for over the span of four into the fifth decade of this song now. And Chris, one more thing about this song that goes off the script of what we're used to a lot with hit songs on this show. How many times do we hear like, oh, I wrote this song in 15 minutes, it became a hit. This song, he really labored over this song. 6 months of revising the lyrics and getting it just right. And you know it took time to, compose and arrange this thing. This is no just slap together song. This was a very thought out, like this kind of goes against that thing that we're hearing all the time. There was a lot of time and effort put into this one.
Yeah, it's such an abstract lyric, kind of an abstract concept. It's mysterious. It's a little exotic. The band didn't really like it. Save it for your solo record. He's laboring over this for like 6 months, and then to have it be this big of a hit. I even mentioned to him, there's a lot of times you can overcook an idea, which he completely agreed with. It didn't happen here. The song's a smash. It's awesome. And again, I got to just hand it to him. Couldn't have asked for a more humble guest. What a guy.
Yeah, he was really, really cool. I really liked him as a person too, even talking off mic here, off the show. I thought he was awesome. Chris, we started this show now 2.5 years now. We're getting towards the end of the year now. When we started the show with awesome guests too, but I don't know. I don't know if I realized we were going to get to the point where we were going to have the guy who wrote Africa on the show. For me as a podcast producer, and I'm sure for you as a podcast host, this was kind of a pinch me moment for us, I think, you know?
Absolutely. It was so, so cool. And speaking of so, so cool, you know what else is cool, Chris?
Would that be our supporting cast program where people can get bonus episodes of the After Party every week?
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner! Winner!
Yeah,
winner.
If you go to ChrisTheMakes.com, you can support the podcast and get extra episodes every week. We're appreciative of that. You help keep this podcast alive. You know, we've had amazing guests talking about incredible songs for years now, and we hope to continue that for as long as possible, and with your help we can. If you go to ChrisTheMakes.com and sign up, that's a big deal to us.
That's right. And like Chris said, with your help, tell a couple friends about the show, maybe that love music that haven't heard about it. We'd really appreciate it, because without you guys, we can't do this. If you haven't already, please join our Chris to Makes a Podcast Facebook group. It's a lot of fun. Weekly, daily discussions. We get crazy in there, and please join us. If you haven't already, give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChristy. And I want to thank this week's guest, David Page, for sitting with us, and we'll see you next week.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.